Well, come with me to the book of Proverbs. Now, some of you may remember that in 1992, I did a series, a Wednesday evening series on the book of Proverbs. Most of those people that were here were there then and are no longer with us now, but I think there's a few still hanging on. I thought, I've been reading through Proverbs in my own personal devotions, and I've just found so much help and support and encouragement. I thought we need to do a new Wednesday evening series, so we're going to be looking at the book of Proverbs. So we're going to begin by looking at the first seven verses. It won't be a pedestrian walk through Proverbs, because obviously there are so many Proverbs, and we could spend a Wednesday on each proverb. We'll try to move relatively swiftly over the ground, but not too swiftly. But we're going to begin this evening by looking at Proverbs chapter 1, verses 1 to 7. So if you have Proverbs chapter 1 in front of you, let's read these verses, and then we'll talk about what it all means. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the simple and knowledge and discretion to the youth. Let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance, to understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. So, the book of Proverbs. And we're told right at the start why we have this book, what it's saying to us, why it's here. And it begins, verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. Now, in the ancient East, wise men were regarded as superstars. Kings, rulers recruited the wise men, trained the wise men so that they could govern and lead their people. And there's also, as it were, a web, I put it like that, of wise men. They weren't just simply isolated in their silos. They would cross-pollinate and talk to one another, share with one another, sharing their insights, their knowledge. Those things would be written down as well. But of course, there's one wise man who stands head and shoulders above all the others, and that is King Solomon. And 1 Kings chapter 3, we are told where his wisdom comes from. And if you remember, the Lord meets with him and in a dream and says, ask and I'll do. And he asks for wisdom. It pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this, and God said to him, because you have asked this, and have not asked yourself long life or riches or the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern what is right, behold, I now do according to your word. Behold, I give you a wise and discerning mind, so that none like you has been before you, and none like you shall arise after you. And of course, God also adds to it, all the other things as well, which he didn't ask for. David, his father, had established the kingdom, united the kingdom, but David was a man of war, he was a warrior, and Solomon is now reigning over Israel. How do I rule over Israel? How do I build the state? How do I administer an empire, grow that empire? Especially when Solomon feels himself to be a child. How? Well, the answer is, through wisdom. He asks God for wisdom. God gives him exactly that. And you get a little glimpse of things by the visit of the Queen of Sheba, 1 Kings chapter 10. You'll perhaps know these verses. The Queen of Sheba, she comes and she says to the king, the report was true that I heard in my own land of your words and of your wisdom, but I did not believe the reports until I came. And my own eyes have seen it, and behold, the half was not told me. Your wisdom and prosperity surpass the report that I heard. Happy are your men, happy are your servants, who continually stand before you and hear your wisdom. Blessed be the Lord your God, who has delighted in you and set you on the throne of Israel. because the Lord loved Israel forever. He has made you king that you may execute justice and righteousness. So there we are, this extraordinary kingdom, Solomon's reign, Solomon's rule. How is it established? It's established through wisdom. Well, as we come to Proverbs, here is a summary of that wisdom, and in fact so much more. Going back to 1 Kings, we're told of Solomon, 1 Kings 4, verse 32, he also spoke 3,000 proverbs. Well, that's more proverbs than are contained in the book of Proverbs. So you have a sense of, when we come to Proverbs, here is the pick. Here is the pick of the Proverbs. Here is the wisdom of Solomon. No doubt many of these proverbs are his own. Also, he would have probably collated them from elsewhere. And there are later additions. We're told in the book of Proverbs, chapter 25, a couple of centuries later, there's an addition. Chapter 25, verse 1, these also are Proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied. So there's some more ones added. And it's not all Solomon, is it? Because you have chapter 30, the words of Agur, son of Jakeh, that's how you pronounce it. And then chapter 31, the words of King Lemuel, an oracle that his mother taught him. There are other voices as well. So here is the book of Proverbs. If you like, almost a distillation of Solomon's wisdom. Of course, then question comes. Next question is: what is a proverb? What is a? It's a short, pithy, easy to remember saying. So, if I say to you, before you commit to this course of action, have you considered all the possible outcomes? Okay, that's fair enough, isn't it? Before you do this, have you considered all the possible outcomes? It's not an unreasonable thing to say, but it's much easier to say, look before you leap. Yeah? That's short, it's pithy, easy to remember. That's what a proverb is. You don't get a big, long, wordy explanation. It's short, it's pithy, it's to the point. And although these proverbs are written down, remember, most of it's going to be transmitted orally. So you want things which are easy to hear, easy to remember, easy to repeat. And that's what a proverb is. Short, pithy, easy to remember sayings. And it's for all life, and it's for everyday life. Because who knows what a day may bring. So you need wisdom at your fingertips. That's why you need to be able to remember these things. Look before you leap. Okay, we remember that, don't we? I need to remember it in the moment. Well, Proverbs is like that. It's in the moment. I need wisdom at my fingertips. So the Proverbs are a bit like the sticky burrs that you get. You know, when you go walking and they stick to your clothing, and Proverbs are like that. They stick to you. Or they're like triggers. Something comes up and, comes into your mind, the proverb. Sometimes they're tripwires. You know, you're about to do something and it's a crazy thing to do, and the proverb trips you up and stops you before you actually do the stupid thing, before you go into disaster. There was a situation many years ago. I wasn't a Christian at the time, I don't think. And I was in Woolworths, and I should have, if I'd known this proverb, I would have saved myself a bit of trouble. It's Proverbs 26, verse 17. Whoever meddles in a quarrel not his own is like one who takes a passing dog by the ears. And I was in Woolworths, and there was an elderly gentleman, and there was a shop worker who was being very, I felt very argy and rude with this elderly gentleman. So I, for want of, because I like a fight, I went in and started telling off the shop worker not to treat the elderly gentleman like that. And then while I was off arguing with the shop worker, the elderly gentleman walked off and I never saw him again. And I was left having an argument that wasn't my own. And we're getting all hot and steamy and, oh, dearie me. I mean, that's just a, you know, doesn't really matter, does it, that I have an argument in Woolworths 50 or so years ago. But the point being is that these things need to be at your fingertips. Because everyday life is like that, isn't it? All sorts of things happen. You walk around the corner. So it has to be short and pithy and to the point so that I've got it there in my head and I know what to do. Okay, that's a proverb. Next question, obviously, is then, what is the book for? Why have we got Proverbs? Well, we're told, aren't we? Chapter 1, verse 2, To know wisdom, and we'll talk about that in a minute, is to make you wise. To know wisdom and instruction. The word instruction there can be translated, other translations have things like, have the word discipline. It's not just you're sitting in a lecture theatre and you're just being spoken to. It's much more the assault course of being put round. It's got the idea of discipline, of training, of correction. So wisdom doesn't just happen. If you're going to be wise, you're going to have to apply yourself to know wisdom and instruction, wisdom and training, wisdom and discipline. You have to win wisdom. It doesn't just come easy, naturally. You have to work at it. But if you work at it, it's certainly worth it, as we shall see as we go through it. To know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight. It makes you insightful, makes you discerning. Okay, wine tasters have a discerning palate, don't they? They can take the wine and they can look at it in the glass and then in the bouquet, and then they take a little sip, and there's a whole complex of flavours, and off they go, saying it's like blackberries on a summer's afternoon on a Tuesday, and they can pick up all those things because they are discerning. That's the sense here, isn't it? Only we're not tasting wine; it's a serious matter. Life is a serious matter. Living it right is a serious matter. So it gives you discernment. It gives you an insight. It means you take into account all the dimensions as much as you can in this decision making. So you are actually, as it were, in this particular decision you have to make, you are the spreading the bouquet and taking in the flavours before you act. You don't rush into things. To know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight. So this is a book so that wisdom captures your mind. You become wise in your thinking. You're trained, you're disciplined. Your thinking gets right. You might say, when wisdom comes, is that moment, isn't it, when things become clear. And you say, "Ah, I see." That's the sense of what's going on here. It's a book so that, I see, I get it. Verse 3, to receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity. So you're not just thinking right, but actually you're doing right. Wise dealing in righteousness, justice, equity. You're doing right. In that moment when you say, "I see, I get it, I now know what to do." So I don't just stay in my head. It's now being worked out in my life. I'm wise in my dealings. It's that word again, isn't it? To receive instruction, to receive training, to receive the discipline. I'm being trained in dealing with things wisely. And of course, if I'm being trained in dealing with things wisely, like any training, there are things I've got to unlearn because they're hopeless and I need to get rid of them. And there are new things that I need to learn. And of course, in any real training, there's going to be a demolition of things that need to go and a building up of things that need to be in place. And it's all... So wise dealing in righteousness, justice, equity. In other words, I know what is the right thing to do. I know what is the just thing to do. I know what is the fair thing to do. And as you all know, that's not always obvious. That's why we need wisdom. Life is not tidy, is it? Life is very messy. Situations are very messy. We as people are very messy. And people and things are not always what they seem. Matters are rarely black and white. And also, even if I think I worked it out, some things are playing with fire. And I've just got to say, no, no, no. Some things are riding a bike and I fall off the bike. So I need to get back on the bike. I need to carry on doing what I was doing. But sometimes fire things look like bike things, and bike things look like fire things. And it's the discernment of what is the right thing to do, which is which. We need to see into the heart of things to make the right call. So here we are, in our everyday life. Life is busy, life is full of surprises. Life is not neat, it's very untidy. Things are rarely straightforward. I need some pithy, easy to remember sayings that will stick to me like burrs, that will trip me up, that will be there to grab hold of at my fingertips, trigger things in my head so that I can look at a situation and all the various scenes of life and make the right call. I see what to do, and then I do it. And Proverbs enables me to do that. But of course, it's more than just simply common sense. Who's then the book for? Well, let's look at verse 4. To give prudence to the simple. Prudence is discretion. It's being careful. It's avoiding unnecessary risks and dangers. It's not going near the edge, however invincible you feel. Because if you're prudent, you realise if I go near the edge, there's a good chance I might fall off the edge. So a prudent person doesn't go near the edge. So it is the way it's put, to give prudence to the simple. Left to ourselves, we'll make a train wreck of our lives. That's what we'll do. All our lives end up with a train wreck. So here's something to say, actually, you'll avoid those things. You'll avoid making a train wreck of your life. And then it says this, verse 4, knowledge and discretion to the youth. And there's a lot in here for young people. What age is a young person? I don't know. But there's a lot here for young people. As you're starting out in life, you don't have to live by trial and error. As you start out in life, you don't have to go through umpteen bitter experiences before you get the right answer. You can avoid those things. Not altogether, but much of it, by listening to the words of Proverbs. And then it says, verse 5, let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance. So it's for those who are going to make a train wreck of their lives, it's for those who are starting out in life, and it's for those who already are wise. Because they need to be made wiser still. If you're wise, then you'll want to be. You want to increase in learning. Let the wise hear and increase in learning. Let them become wiser still. So much so that you can unlock the wisdom of the wisest. Let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance to understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. So you'll become so wise that you'll be able to unlock the wisest sayings of all. So, if you have, just turn to Proverbs 26 and see if you can unlock this one. Proverbs 26 and verse 4. Answer not a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him yourself. And the next verse says, answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. There you are. Saying two contradictory things. Or contradicting yourself, isn't it? Now, obviously, when it was put together, they know it's not contradicting. But answer not a fool according to his folly, lest you become like him yourself. Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. What does that mean? Yeah, so there are some times when you say, I'm just not going to answer this one. And the other ways, you say, well, I'll give him a taste of his own medicine. And he realises what a fool he's being.
Pick your fights.
Yes. Well, you can. Yes. So, but it requires discernment, doesn't it? Which verse in that situation do I need? It's very hard, isn't it? So what it's saying is that if you get this book, you'll understand a proverb and a saying, and the words of the wise and their riddles. You'll get to such a pitch of wisdom that you'll know which of those verses in your situation you should apply. Because actually they seem to be saying things that are polar opposites, but actually in the situation you say, yeah, that's the one I should use that verse, that's when I should use that verse. It's this discernment, it's this seeing into the heart of things, this wisdom that it gives you. Okay, so the question is then, what is wisdom? We've been talking about wisdom. What is wisdom? Well, it's not education. And it's not being an intellectual. And it's not being clever. And it's not being knowledgeable. The Babylonians were known for their genius in mathematics and astronomy. But they weren't wise. The Egyptians built pyramids. Think of the engineering. Think of that feat. That was extraordinary, isn't it? But they weren't wise. You can have a general, you know, I love reading military history, and you see some of the things that generals, certain generals did, and you think, well, that's in one sense, in a military sense, that's genius. So clever, that just summed up the situation. They've looked at the battlefield, they've looked at the forces arrayed against them, and they've seen who's on the other side, they've seen the general they're facing, and they've worked out how to lay a trap into which the other side are going to come, and their defeat will be total. But that's not wisdom, is it, in the way we're talking about here? Who remembers Nick Clegg? Nick Clegg? Yeah, who was Nick Clegg?
The Lib Dem
Coalition.
That's right, Lib Dem Coalition. He was Deputy Prime Minister. Okay, now this is not political, but I'm going to say something which will sound political, but it's not meant to be. Nick Clegg's far enough away that you'll understand. In fact, he was born just down the road from me. Now, he's a very clever man. He went to Cambridge. He's fluent in English, French, Dutch, German, and Spanish. To be fluent in those things, you've obviously got to be a very able. He's won awards. He was a journalist. He's authored books. He became an MP. Became leader of the Lib Dems. He was a deputy prime minister. He stood at the dispatch box when David Cameron wasn't around. He was at Prime Minister's Question Times, and there he was, all the rest of it. But forgive me if I say this, but I never ever heard him say a wise thing. I never ever heard him say anything that I felt, oh, I need to write that down and remember that. And it became a kind of fascination for me, because I used to tune in to hear what he had to say. And I thought, I wonder if I hear something this time. And I never heard anything that was ever worthy of remembering or writing down. He seemed like sometimes you see a small boy standing by a big door, and the small boy slams the door, makes a lot of noise, everyone in the room turns and looks at the little boy. It was a bit like, I felt like that with Nick Clegg. He'd slam the door, get the room's attention, and then have nothing to say. What am I trying to say? I'm trying to say that there's a man who's obviously exceptionally gifted, very able, very clever, but he's not wise. And that's because he's like me. I'm exactly that. I'm full of wind and rubbish and talk nonsense. None of us are wise, left to ourselves. I mean, we're very conscious, aren't we, with our ruling elites at the moment. We wait in vain for them to do something that's wise and discerning. They seem just to find clever ways to say stupid things. So what is wisdom? In terms of Proverbs, what is it?
It's knowledge applied.
Okay, knowledge applied. But I'm a builder in ancient Egypt, and I'm applying my knowledge to build a pyramid. I don't disagree with you. I'm just throwing it back
out. Knowledge applied to live life well, successfully.
Okay, all right.
Truth from God.
Truth from God. Okay.
Seeing things as they really are.
Seeing things as they really are. Yeah.
Fear of God.
Fear of God. Okay, so we're moving in those. Anyone want to add anything or throw anything into that?
Well, you're saying what wisdom is.
Yes.
Wisdom is to make the best choice in a situation you're going through.
Yeah. So you're seeing into the heart of things, aren't you? And you're making the best choice. And everything everyone has said is different dimensions of it. So I was only being rude, Jeff. So it's not. It's seeing things as they really are. It's having a true insight into the heart of the matter. I see. And then choosing, seeing it, understanding it, and then choosing the action which is right and just and fair, because that's what it says in verse 3, righteousness, justice, and equity. It's knowing when to act as well, because sometimes I may understand what I need to do, but actually wisdom involves when I do it. There may be wisdom in leaving it. Or there may be wisdom in saying, I understand the situation, I've worked it out, and all the rest of it, and my wisdom is to do nothing in this situation. So it's knowing when to do it, or if indeed to lead it, leave it. It's seeing into the heart of things. And of course, I mentioned the fear of the Lord. You could perhaps sum it up by saying it's practical holiness. It's godly living. I see, I know, I understand, I wait, and if I think it's right and discerning, I act. That's what wisdom is. And therefore we've touched on things already, because where is wisdom to be found? And that's verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. And you have a similar thing, which is in chapter 9, verse 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is insight. Who is the first person who wanted to be wise? Eve, yes. Yeah, well, Adam and Eve, yeah. So it's Eve, wasn't it? Do you remember Eve? She's looking at the tree, and we read, so when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and it was a delight to the eyes, and the tree was to be desired to make one wise. She wants to be wise. But she did something which was so immensely foolish. She took the fruit, and she didn't fear the Lord. And we all know what happened after that. The fear of the Lord. If you want to be wise, then you are to fear the Lord. You cannot be wise without fearing the Lord. It's the beginning of wisdom. It's not like, you know, I've got a certain level of wisdom and then I graduate into a higher level of wisdom when I come to know God. Before I'm converted, I know nothing. And the more I know the Lord, the greater my fear of the Lord, the greater the wisdom is. You've heard me give this illustration before, but I think it perhaps captures it. You know, here's a man, he's sitting in a garden, and he's thinking about what he's going to do today. Maybe he's going to do some gardening, or go for a walk, or do some messaging, or do something. He's not quite sure, maybe I'll go shopping. Sitting in his garden, what am I going to do? And sitting behind him is this great lion, this beautiful lion, with gold in his mane and wisdom in his eyes. And is simply watching the man. And the man's got his back to the lion, and he's making all his plans, thinking about what he's going to do, and it's all done without any reference to this great lion that is sitting behind him. He's ignoring the single biggest fact in his life. And that's the picture, isn't it? Because the Lord is the great lion himself. He's the King of glory and wisdom and power. He's the one before whose face heaven and earth will flee away. And I live in his presence. And he's not just the biggest fact in my life. He's the deepest reality of all, and all other realities rest upon him. If he was to, for a moment, withdraw his power, everything would cease to exist, but he would remain. All other realities, time, space, me, everything, rest upon this great truth that God is, and I live in his presence. And I'm the creature, and he's the creator. And I'm the sinner, and he's the Holy One. And I'm the rebel, and he's the God of steadfast love. And therefore the fear of the Lord is not to live with my back to him or half in sight. The fear of the Lord is to live face to face with him. Face to face with the great lion. If you like, to rest between his paws. Even to sink into his mane. It's to know his unveiled presence, to be conscious, to cultivate that sense of the presence of God. And it's to be humble before him, and to walk humbly before him, and to walk obediently before him, And it's to love him best and first and always. It's to go to him. It's to run to him. It's to know that the God I cannot see is more real than everything I can see. And let God be true and everyone else a liar. It's to live in the light of that great reality. And so you can see what it means. It means that I'm afraid to sin, but I'm unafraid to seek his forgiveness. I'm afraid to live as though I'm in charge. This is my life. I choose. That's what Eve was doing, wasn't it? I choose. It's afraid to do that, but it's unafraid to surrender my life to him. It's afraid to withhold anything from God. As though I turn my back and this is for me. This is mine. But I'm unafraid to surrender everything to him, the one who loved me and gave himself for me. It's afraid to live at a distance, but it's unafraid to draw nearer and nearer. And it's afraid to live with my back to God and to live for the petty gods, the godless, the idols that we live for. But it's unafraid to worship and adore him. If I fear him, so it's relational, then the God of wisdom, through his word, by his spirit, will make me wise. If I'm walking with the God of wisdom, then I will become wise. That's how it works. It's not automatic. It depends on me being humble before him. Fearing God means I recognise creator, king, but equally child and father, the bride of Christ. But it's a humility. Dr. Martin Lloyd-Jones said the last thing that Christians get is discernment. Interesting, isn't it? You have lots of knowledge, lots of Bible knowledge, but you won't necessarily be wise, because wisdom depends upon your relationship with God. That's why you can have people who perhaps have had very little, how can I put it, theological training or anything, but immensely wise, because they walk with God and God has given them wisdom, and it doesn't depend and rest upon how clever they are, how well read they are, how knowledgeable they are. It depends on the fact that they have walked with God and love God and delight in God and know him. So that's what it is. The fear of the Lord. Do you think it's ever, for a Christian, it's ever right to be afraid of God? What do you think?
You have such awe and respect for Jesus Christ. He could never say anything that I would dare to disagree with. No man ever spoke like him. And so the beginning of wisdom, when I started to become wise, was when I was in awe, when I understood who Jesus Christ, the fear of the Lord Jesus Christ, the respect and honor and, that I gave to him, that determined how I sought to live afterwards.
It's knowing who he is, isn't it? And knowing him. I asked a question about being afraid because I think several years ago, perhaps I can put it like this, there's a situation where someone knew what they should do, that they should face the lion, if I can put it like that. And they chose to run away from the lion. And that was the most dangerous thing to do. Because they ran away from the lion, a very solemn judgment came upon them. And because it was a long, progressive thing, and many warnings and so on, and they just went and did their own thing. And I remember my spontaneous sense, which lasted for for some time, I think, was actually I felt afraid of God. Because I mean, we know God is real, but sometimes when things happen, we realise just how serious and weighty these things are, and that he is the lion, and we are to sink into his mane, and we are to live between the paws. But if you run away from him, because you're being defiant and willful and rebelling, there's a right sense of being afraid, because he is the lion. He's not a tame lion, is he? So always the safe thing, always the happy thing, always the joyful thing, always the real thing, is to live face to face with him and to walk with him. It's the fear of the Lord in that sense, isn't it? It's not a cringing, servile fear that I'm giving one anxious performance after another, hoping that he loves me. It's feeling safe in his presence. It's knowing that I'm loved, knowing that he's given his son. There's no ceiling, no limit to his love for me, because to go to the cross means there can be no limit. And he gave everything for me. And therefore I surrender to him and love him and walk with him and delight in him. But he's still the lion. Still the lion. I've gone on a bit long talking, but I'll finish here. Who is the wisest human being of all then?
Jesus.
The Lord Jesus Christ, yes. And he feared the Lord. Isaiah 11 tells us about Jesus. Says, and the Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. And his delight shall be in the fear of the Lord. He shall not judge by what his eyes see, or decide disputes by what his ears hear. So you see, he's wise. No one feared the Lord like Jesus did. And no one was wise, one wiser than Solomon is here. So, as we wind this up, if we get Proverbs into us, this book will make you like the Lord Jesus Christ. And everything that's spoken about the wise man in Proverbs, you want to know what that looks like, fleshed out, it looks like Jesus. This is a book that will make you like him. This is a book that will lead you to him. This will be a book that will leave you in adoring wonder of Christ and say, ah, that's who I want to be like, and to know him more. You'll find that those who take Proverbs to heart, the beauty of the Lord will be upon them. And it'll bring you into a closer walk with the Lord. Psalm 25, the friendship of the Lord is for those who fear him. So as we learn the fear of the Lord, so the Lord discloses more and more of himself to us. He's not a master with a slave, I won't tell you what I'm going to do. He's the friend who says, I'm going to tell you what I've planned. I'm going to tell you that my secrets. That's why wise people can discern things, because God is telling them the secrets. And they're often ahead of everyone else because God has spoken to them, and they know, they can see, they can understand, they grasp things. More than just simply a verse tells me this. It's because they're walking with the Lord. And whatever the chastenings and disciplines and instruction to make us wise, it always leads to this glorious and happy outcome, which is why, as we close, Proverbs 4 says, Proverbs 5, chapter 4, verse 5 says, get wisdom, get insight. Do not forget and do not turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her and she will keep you. Love her and she will guard you. The beginning of wisdom is this. Get wisdom. And whatever you get insight. Prize her highly and she will exalt you. She will honor you if you embrace her. She will place on your head a graceful garland. She will bestow on you a beautiful crown. So we've whetted our appetite for Proverbs. Yep. Let's finish there.